So, you have decided to find out a bit more about coaching and education. Where do I start? What training courses are available and how might a coaching culture benefit my school community? Welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching and Education podcast series. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and it's time to find out what happens when theory and good intentions meet reality. In this episode, I'm pleased to be joined by Paul Bennett. Paul is currently an associate principal at Howick College, a large multicultural co-ed high school in East Auckland, New Zealand. Paul has taught at all levels of both the British and New Zealand systems of education. His interest in teacher coaching began when he became a specialist classroom teacher, using coaching to support first-year teachers to develop their practice. In 2019, Paul completed his doctoral thesis, which focused on how teacher coaching was being implemented across New Zealand high schools. In each of the schools Paul has worked, he has implemented school-wide teacher coaching programs. Currently, at Howick College, he leads a team of 12 trained teacher coaches, who coach 134 teachers. Since 2009, Paul has also provided leadership learning, professional development to school leaders, business managers, and sports teams. These courses focus on developing effective teams, coaching, and leadership styles. Paul, it's a pleasure to have you on the Coaching and Education podcast.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for the opportunity.
Paul, to put things in context for our listeners, can you tell us a little of your own journey in education so far and what or who got you interested in coaching initially?
Yeah, so in terms of my teaching career, I started teaching in the southwest of England many, many years ago. And then 18 years ago, I made the move over to New Zealand and was still a classroom teacher when I first arrived. And then, as you said in that intro, there was a position created in all secondary schools in New Zealand called the Specialist Classroom Teacher. And this was a role where they were basically supporting first-year teachers, but other teachers as well who might be finding challenges in the classroom. And in the first instance, I guess it was a mentoring role. But as that Specialist Classroom Teacher role developed, they started bringing in some ideas about coaching. Jan Robinson at that time was over here in New Zealand, and she'd just written a book about leadership coaching, and she started to develop some coaching courses. Jan Hill was also over here, you know, nearly 20 years ago, looking at how coaching could be used to improve teachers' practice. So in that specialist classroom role, you know, I started to understand there was this thing called coaching. And on a one-to-one basis, as I developed my own skills, I could see how it was supporting teachers to develop their practice. It was quite a challenging school I was working in. First-year teachers were coming in. They were really struggling with things like behavior management. You know, I was developing a coaching approach. And I could see that there was a benefit. As I moved up into senior leadership position in the same school, I was thinking, oh, I've found the golden egg here. And so probably in my leadership naivety, I decided that it was going to be great for everyone. We were probably one of the first schools that I know of that employed a full-time teacher coach. And why I was naive was because I just thought, upscale. It worked for me. It worked for this small group of teachers. All I need to do is upscale this. And it bombed. It really went badly, the coaching failed on that larger scale. And at that point, I was sort of like, "Oh, this is interesting. So, you know, how come it worked here, but it didn't work here on the larger scale?" And so, I started doing some research for my master's at the time around professional learning and what makes a difference. And that's really what got me hooked into the coaching world. I could see, obviously, there was a fair bit of research at the time around large-scale professional learning and what worked and didn't work, and particularly around sustainability. People, you know, were going off to one-day, three-day conferences or courses. They were coming back. They were having a great time. It was costing a lot of money, but the learning wasn't being sustained. And so that led to my PhD thesis, which was focused directly on coaching and how coaching can be supported to change teachers' practice, and particularly how, as a professional learning approach, it can sustain those changes. So my last two positions, I've been deputy principal and now associate principal. I've put that into practice and developed some relatively large coaching programs, 134 teachers, 12 or 14 coaches, and just focused on that individualized professional learning for the staff in the schools I've worked.
Fantastic. I love that phrase, leadership naivety. I think that's brilliant. And you know, the fact that when you talked about it working so well for you initially, and then just, you know, assuming that upscaling would be a straightforward practice, and I love your phrase, it just bombed. And I think people appreciate, you know, that honesty when we're sharing stories about what we've done and what we've tried. Very quickly, you decided, okay, how has this failed, and how do we fix it, and how do we, you know, we're not going to be knocked back here. Paul, in the previous three episodes, I have asked head teachers about the barriers to developing coaching in a school setting. Can you share with us some of those initial challenges and barriers when developing the idea of coaching at Howick College, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, so, I mean, definitely are some barriers there, just at Howick, but, you know, also across the country. When I interviewed people for my thesis, time was an obvious one in terms of resourcing. And I think a lot of that came from senior leaders who didn't really understand the coaching model. You know, they might have read a book, or they might have heard about it, but not really understanding the depth and the amount of time it actually takes to change someone's practice. So I think that leaders need to think quite carefully in terms of, I'm going to invest in this, but it's going to be a heavy investment in terms of time that's actually required to change. Because with coaching, you're not only looking to change people's practice, typically you'll be changing their beliefs and how they, what they believe about teaching and learning and students. And so time is a big one. Some of the challenges we faced here in terms of the nuts and bolts were just things like timetable. We've got a large staff. We've got 134 teachers. Just being able to line up a coach with a coachee and making sure that they're going to have a suitable time. I've got a belief in schools, in order to make real change, you need a sort of about every fortnight to be meeting with your coach. So even if we say, in the timetable, we're going to create this time for you to be able to meet someone once fortnight, the reality is that will roll out to every 3 weeks because of athletics day or, you know, other things that happen, which is why we say 2 weeks, because, you know, if you say twice a term, in reality, that will be once a term, and it's just not enough to make change. I think some of the mistakes we've made is getting really deep into coaching ourselves, but then not communicating that to the rest of the staff. You know, we spend a lot of time training our coaches in the first instance, and we got very excited about coaching for sort of 6 months in a little bubble. And when we went out to staff, we just sort of said, oh, we're going to be doing coaching. And they all looked at us as if like, oh yeah, what's that about then? Yeah, and rightly so, because they just sort of, you know, you could just see this look of what's in it for me? How much time is this going to take up? You know, where we'd had experience of coaching and we'd seen successes, so we were sort of quite excited about it. And I know some of the organizations here that are working in schools have started to do a sort of one-day introduction for coachees. So they actually, the coachees get an understanding of what's happening and the why behind coaching and why it might be different to other or better than other PL approaches. We had some other nuts and bolts things around teachers' contracts. So here, teachers are given five non-contact periods for planning and things like that. And we had to be quite careful how we maneuvered around that because we wanted to use some of that time. And so we had to do some work with the union and talk that through. And I guess the other barrier is around just building that trust and taking some time for, like everything really, for teachers to build trust with their coaches and to see that there was going to be some gain for them and their students. And that was definitely a matter of time. So, you know, a number of challenges that some of them I think were quite obvious ones around, you know, structural things like timetable and who was going to work with who. How are we going to find the resourcing to pay the coaches? But then some of those other less easy to define things, which have really just taken time for the program to develop.
Yeah, one of the misconceptions, and I know you would agree out there about developing a coaching culture in a school is that it happens overnight, and it ties in, really well with what you say about investing that amount of time. You'd mentioned a number of years ago, New Zealand's Investing in Educational Success initiative had given you and neighbouring schools as well access to funding, which you had used to create what you call within school coaches. Can you give us a wee bit of an insight, Paul, just into what that role entailed? And again, just a wee bit on the time investment side of things that you needed to put in before really seeing results of all that hard work.
Yeah, so I guess we were quite lucky in terms of the Educational Success Initiative, and that was basically an offer to all New Zealand schools, right the way from kindergarten up to secondary, and it basically said that if you were able to come together in a community of learning, that are called kahuriako over here, so typically there might be one or two secondary schools and then some primary schools and some kindergartens, and you could work on initiatives together, then there would be funding available for what were called within school teacher roles. They were basically facilitation. There wasn't much definition around what their exact role should be, other than they should support teachers to develop their practice. So, we'd already had at that time, this desire to definitely implement coaching in our school, and we could see there with these roles that had been created, we were basically just going to make them into Uber coaches, and that's what we said. We were going to put our investment and our time with these 12 people to just to make sure that they were the best coaches they could possibly be. So we probably spent about 6 to 8 months in the first instance, just training them, and that was an interesting time because they were getting paid. Basically, they had one less teaching line than everyone else, so 4 or 5 hours a week of further non-contact time, which was their coaching time. But they were just training at this time. So, there was some disgruntled colleagues that were sort of saying, "What are this group of people doing? They've got a great life." Looking back on it, it was probably the most important time in terms of making sure, they were coaching each other, they were attending coaching courses, we were doing a lot of reading about coaching. So that when we did roll it out to staff, it went well. And certainly a number of other schools that I've worked with and seen, they've maybe tried to jump that stage. And I think the challenge of that is if you don't train your coaches well and spend that time, is that the first experience that teachers may have of coaching is poor. And so they just say, "Well, coaching's rubbish." Because actually, their first experiences with someone who's not a good coach, and doesn't really know what they're doing. And I've also feel a little bit that way about peer coaching models where people, just say every teacher in the school is going to be a coach, and they might give them, a couple of hours training and say, "Right, find a corner of the staff room." There's some benefit in that, but very little in my mind in terms of putting untrained people together to have a conversation. Whereas the model we've used, we've been very explicit about training the coaches that this is a completely different role. We need to define the role, and probably the other most important thing is a weekly supervision. So we develop that on the way that our counsellors work. Because they have weekly supervision meetings where they meet up and talk about their cases and maybe look at recent research and watch each other coach or counsel. So we took that model for our coaches, and our 12 coaches meet up with myself and another senior leader each week. We talk through challenges. We talk about the next stage of coaching we'll be moving to when new literatures come out. So Christian's book, Advanced Coaching, a couple of years ago, how is that going to change our practice? How's that going to change our resources? And I think that's been a really important aspect of the model, is not just saying, "Okay, you've been a coach, off you go." Because it is challenging. And we've certainly learnt that there's a development to it. yes, you can do your 2-day course and you will be a certain level of coach. But actually 3 years down the line after a huge amount of coaching and, you know, reading of resources and attending courses, you're going to be a much more effective coach. So it's just sort of walking that journey, I guess, with those within school leaders. The first year was very structural. It was about that initial training. It was about getting the structure set up. How's it going to fit in the timetable? You know, who's going to coach who? Let's do some practice. The second year was probably around just building trust and letting the model roll. And it's now as sort of third, fourth year where we're teachers who have and coaches who have been in the model for that whole time are starting to go, oh, you know, okay, I get it now. I understand, what we're trying to do here. They're seeing the benefits for their students and in their own teaching practice. But I guess the challenge behind all of that is we're a large staff and, you know, typically there's a lot of transition. So, you know, something that we didn't account for is that we would train up all these people, they'd all build relationships, and then, you know, typically about 10% of our staff move on every year. And so, you know, we've got instances where you've got new coachees coming in who, you know, have no idea what coaching is, and obviously we're having to retrain new coaches as well, who then are at a different level to the coaches that have been with us for 3 or 4 years. So we've had to really think quite carefully about that differentiation of working with coachees and also with coaches.
But I think it's really, really useful, Paul, whenever you share the fact that you're talking about, you know, a number of years there. Yes, we can sign up, as you say, to a 2-day course, but that's just a taster. You know, that's just a starting point. And when you talk about your coaches that you work with, you know, 12 coaches, that idea of investing 6 to 8 months of proper training time, is extremely valuable. And it really resonates with me when you talk about, you know, yes, there are schools out there who will say all of a sudden everybody's a coach. We'll go on a 2-day course and all of a sudden we're all coaches and we'll coach each other and everything will be lovely. And yes, there's an element of advantage to that, you know, benefit, and that would certainly benefit people, but it's not a proper thorough coaching program in the school. And, you know, I like the idea when you're talking about taking these people for 6 months and, you know, 4 or 5 hours in the week, and you use the phrase disgruntled colleagues, you know, looking on thinking, you know, what's this? These people are having a lovely time. And I think sometimes that's one of the challenges of being a head teacher. Whenever you have the vision and you have all the facts and figures and you can see what's coming up, you know, in a year's time, in 2 years' time, and you just have to hold on there with the cohort that you have and really make that happen. And then, you know, you're saying in year two, let's actually make this model work. And people are starting at that stage to say, yes, I can see what this is. And I think as well, it's really useful for people to hear that idea that, yes, as head teachers, we do have movement of staff in and out of school. That's just a reality of the job that we have. And we need to take that into consideration. So whilst you invest a lot of time and effort, it needs to be an ongoing thing. And I suppose under ongoing review, you'd mentioned in the notes you'd shared with me earlier, Paul, before that we had this conversation, about this idea of a system for tracking outcomes specifically related to coaching. Obviously, you folks, you know, you're working at an advanced stage of a coaching culture. Can you tell us a wee bit more about the tracking outcomes and what's involved in that?
Yeah, and this is a bit of an ongoing journey, and I think it will be for a long time. There is actually more literature out there than I think people know or think about in terms of evaluating coaching. Certainly one of the things that I saw from my thesis is particularly in the States, there's been quite a number of large scale evaluation research done into coaching. And so we took some of their ideas, particularly around pre and post evaluation of, you know, what are some strategies we can put in place before coaching happens, and then try and measure, for want of a better word, or evaluate after the coaching happened. And what we've really focused on is individual partnership outcomes. So, you know, across the school, we've got 134 partnerships. So each coach might have 8 or 9 teachers that they're working with on a fortnightly basis. And what we've basically worked with our coaches to develop is a range of different evaluation strategies, which are all things that have been used before, but just putting them into the coaching context. So for example, you might have, because each one of the coaching partnerships has a different foci, it's then thinking what is going to be the best evaluation strategies for that goal or coaching foci. So something as simple, first year teacher might not be able to get year nine students to sit down and focus. So we'll do a pre-observation video. And in the video, we might literally count how many students are on task at any one time. And then, we'll put coaching in place for 5 weeks, 6 months, and then go back and video the same class and count the same thing. Quite often we'll use student voice. So a lot of our teachers are working with a group of students. It's typically boys for whatever reason. And we'll go and interview the boys who they're working with first with a set of questions, and then we'll interview them again post-coaching. But I think that's important in any coaching partnership anyway. But by gathering all that data together for the 134 partnerships, you start to get some understanding of the culture across the school, which is quite useful when you're going for things like funding and you're explaining it to the board, because you can turn that into percentages. You can say, of our 134 partnerships, 68% of them believed that they're from this pre-coaching to post-coaching, there was a change in teachers' practice. Some of them are easy strategies where we're just looking at the difference between student achievement, on a standardized test. We're going to do some coaching around literacy strategies, and then we're going to go and do the standardized test again. What we try and encourage our coaching partnerships to do is maybe look at three or four strategies per coaching goal. So we might have some pre-post interviews with the students. We might have some student data. We might have a video. So and we collate all that in a big tracking sheet, it's useful for us to see what are the common themes, because everybody is working on different things across the school, but also to see how many people perceive through those strategies that I talked about that there's been a shift in teachers' practice, but also there's been a shift in student outcomes. So that sort of partnership outcomes tracking is one aspect. In terms of the coaches' practice, we developed with Growth Coaching developed for us, a coaching rubric which we use with our coaches. So it's got six aspects of practice: the skills of coaching, the way of being, goal focus, coaching in action, observation of practice, and feedback. And for each of those aspects of practice, there's like an emerging criteria, a developing, an effective, and a highly effective. And our coaches use that throughout the year to review their own practice, but also as part of some of those supervision meetings, we'll observe each other coaching and make comment and make evaluation using that rubric. So that sort of sits alongside as another strategy for showing development of the program. We have the coachy questionnaire. So at the start of the year, the end of the year, we have a coach questionnaire that we use with all 134 staff and look at their sort of perception of how the coaching program's going. And we also have a sort of, for want of a better word, an appraisal interview about halfway through the year with each of the coaches, where we look at their coachy feedback. We look at their self-reflection using the rubric. We look at peer reflection from other coaches looking at the rubric. And then we just look at those evaluation strategies for the partnership outcomes and go through a sort of set of questions and a bit of an interview. So it's a bit of a triangulation. I don't think there's any sort of black and white quantitative piece of research that you can do. Is this working? But I think those four sort of aspects together of our strategy gives us a real clear picture of, are we moving teachers? Because if you're not moving teachers, coaching's just very expensive conversations. Are we making a change in teachers' practice? And most importantly, is it having some outcome for our students?
But it's interesting to listen to the what is obviously a very detailed, thorough approach to assessing the impact of coaching in your school. It's a great example for the students in your school to see that the staff, including yourself, as a principal, constantly learning through the process and constantly looking to the research, you know, what is happening in other schools, how are other people evaluating this? And even your phrase where you say there's actually more information and research out there than sometimes we realise. So taking the time to go and look at that and then immediately applying that to your own setting. You know, I think that's a good example for the students in your school, because we're trying to constantly encourage them, you know, in their learning. So it's great to set that example as staff. What you say, Paul, and I'm just thinking out loud here, you've obviously come through the last number of years, initially with the master's. So again, you know, research and coaching, and then moving into the doctorate. How big a help has that been for your school to have you obviously coming through that process and being able to apply that to your staff and your setting?
I think it's quite fundamental for somebody in the school to have a deep understanding of coaching. You know, to understand what are we actually trying to achieve here, and you know, what is the difference between you know, a one day sort of dip your toe in the ocean coaching course and, you know, what might be called advanced coaching or a coaching culture. So you don't necessarily have to spend, you know, 5 years of your life doing that. But, you know, I think, you know, that aspect of leadership is really important in any school, that somebody in the school has a deep understanding of how you move teachers from, you know, point A to point B. Because it is a complex thing. I think typically in life we understand that, like we understand how hard it is to change our approach to going to the gym, or we understand how hard it is to change an addiction. But when it comes to professional learning in schools, we typically sort of go, oh yeah, we can just do this course and it will happen overnight. And it's a real hard thing to do. You know, you're trying to change someone's practice. You're trying to change typically their beliefs. And yeah, there's a whole lot of learning that leaders need to be able to understand around that.
But I'm sure it's lovely for you, Paul, when right back at the start of our conversation, whenever you tried to upscale and immediately this bombed. You know, it must be lovely at this point now to sit, not resting on your laurels, but be able to look around the school and see those sort of numbers, you know, 134 teachers being coached and being coached effectively by a group of 12 coaches, and being able to continually look at that group of 12 people who, as you have said, will be changing from one year to the next, and be conscious of, you know, retraining people, new teachers coming in and educating them about what coaching is and what it is they're going to actually receive. You know, it must be very encouraging as a head teacher to see things move up to that scale, because it certainly comes across to me, you know, that, you know, it's a very effective approach that you've taken. And with all of the research in the background driving the whole thing, you know, I'm sure you're really satisfied with how you are, and you know, moving forward, you know, where do you see yourself, you know, in another 4 or 5 years? You'll hardly do another PhD. So what would you see the next couple of years panning out as?
I think at Howick it's going to be continuing to develop the coaching culture. Yeah, you can see now that it's moving from just being a thing we do. Because, you know, that guy at the front said we had to every 2 weeks, to people wanting to be involved and wanting to meet with their coach and saying, so alongside the coaching, we sort of use a framework of inquiry, and the two things together, you can see are just sort of seeping into everything we do. So when people have a problem with the class, you know, they'll say, or can you coach me on this? And at a leadership level, you know, the deputy principals will come in and say, oh, can you coach me about X, Y, or Z? And, you know, you can see that development now of it's given us a structure with the inquiry. And that's from a, you know, I can't get my year nines to sit down sort of level, up to how are we going to implement this school-wide strategic project, that we've got a sort of framework of inquiry and coaching that is going to support any challenge that we come up against. And that's what I'm looking for the next few years, is just seeing that develop, you know, across the school. I think it just gives people, in some ways it gives them confidence that, okay, yeah, we're going to get challenges. It's a large school. It's a large community. There's always going to be issues. But here's an effective strategy or sort of approach that we're always going to be able to explore those challenges with. So I guess the future for me is just that developing that culture. We're starting to move into not just our coaches being trained, but our heads of learning area, our heads of faculties, our senior leadership team. So we can sort of take that culture to a next level.
Fantastic. Paul, again, I've asked this question to other school leaders, and I think it's an important one. What advice would you give our listeners who are at the curious stage with regard to introducing coaching in their school and organisation? Looking back at your journey and what you now know, what are the most useful first steps that they could take?
I like this idea of curious first steps. I think, as I said before, so somebody on the staff needs to have a deep understanding of coaching and the why of coaching and how it actually works. I think people need to have some clarity of what they're actually trying to achieve. You know, coaching is a useful professional learning approach because it is differentiated. But you know, are you using it as part of your appraisal process? That's a real important one. Or is it actually sitting outside of appraisal? We found that makes quite a significant difference. So have some, you know, have some clarity. Are you just trying to implement a particular initiative like a literacy strategy? Or are you trying to do something more differentiated in terms of just developing teachers' practice on a particular identified goal for each teacher? So have some clarity of actually what you're trying to do. Define the coach's role. So, you know, everybody's really clear about who these people are and introduce that to the staff. So, like I said, that they understand coaching. They understand that they're not just meeting with someone who's going to keep staring at them and not, you know, asking funny questions. So, you know, they've got an understanding of what's happening across the whole staff. As I've said, train the coaches, build capacity, develop a program that's based on trained coaches who are constantly supervised in terms of giving them an opportunity to share the challenges, to help each other, to have conversations. So build that into the program, and also build into the program that capacity issue that, you know, people are going to leave, coaches are going to leave, new teachers are going to come in. You know, who's going to train them? Who's going to introduce coaching to the new teachers? So there's always that you know, thinking ahead aspect. Probably most importantly, create explicit time for coaching. If you really want it to work, and if you want to see genuine change in your staff, you know, I said fortnightly, and you know, there needs to be time. It can't just be, oh, we're expecting you to do this after school, or we're expecting you to do this in your lunchtime. There has to be actual time set aside where the two people can sit down, you know, away from students, away from other staff, and have those deep coaching conversations. And then just think from the start, how are you going to evaluate this? You know, what are some simple pre-post strategies for the program as a whole, but also within individual partnerships that you might use, you know, just to track how are your coaches developing in their skill set? But also, you know, how is each partnership developing and what are they actually trying to do and change and did it change? You know, and that doesn't have to be hard numbers data by any means, but I think it gives each partnership some clarity and some real focus if you're asking them to be accountable for what it is they're aiming for.
Yeah. Fantastic. Paul, it's been fascinating listening to your coaching story today, particularly in your current post at Howard College. It certainly has inspired me as a school leader, and I'm sure many of our listeners, to see how coaching can be implemented at such a large scale in a school setting. Thank you for sharing what a coaching culture can look like when it's central to a school's vision for future development. For our listeners, if Paul's story has resonated with you, check out the Growth Coaching International website, where there is an impressive range of free resources, including webinars, newsletters, and of course, more podcast episodes. For now, I hope you will join me again on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.